This is Living Lab. I'm Heather Goldstone. The epidemic of opioid addiction and overdoses sweeping the nation is bad enough as it is. But if it weren't, a new study suggests that in a very small number of cases, opioids could be linked to profound memory loss. It's kind of a medical mystery story, and it all starts in November of 2015. That's when a neurologist at Lahey Hospital and Medical Center in Burlington, Massachusetts, got in touch with officials at the Department of Public Health. Dr. Alfred DeMaria is one of those officials. He's the medical director and state epidemiologist with the Bureau of Infectious Disease and Laboratory Sciences. Dr. DeMaria, welcome to Living Lab.
Thank you, Heather.
All right, let's start at the very beginning, as the saying goes. Four cases that neurologist Jed Barish reported to the Department of Public Health. What was so peculiar about these four cases?
Well, it's not unusual to get those kind of calls and get that kind of information. But I had known Dr. Barish. He had worked with us a few years ago while he was a fellow. And he had a very convincing story about how unusual it was to see four cases of this condition in a short space of time compared to what was in the world literature that he had reviewed. So it did catch my attention, and it did seem something worth pursuing because of the unusual nature of the observation. That, as I said, that's not unusual, and sometimes we pursue them, and sometimes we just wait for more evidence to accrue. But in this case, four seemed enough compared to what the historical record had.
So let's be clear. This is four cases of people who came to the hospital with some sort of memory loss, and then it was figured out that there might be a relationship to opioid use?
Yeah, actually, more that it was four cases of memory loss with a very specific finding on the MRIs that these patients had. So the hippocampi are parts of the brain that process and store memories and are very important in terms of accruing memory. And these patients had this unusual finding. And I think that's what was most unusual because, you know, people can use a variety of substances and have a variety of memory problems. But this very specific syndrome was what made it unusual.
And was the memory loss, you know, affected memories that had already been formed? They couldn't remember who they were or their past life? Or was it something that affected their ability to form new memories going forward, or both?
Well, because the hippocampus processes and consolidates memories, it was really new memories. So a good way to explain it is these people could drive to places that they went, you know, for many years to work or to their relatives' homes. But if you gave them instructions for a new destination, they could not remember it in the time it would take to get there. So they had trouble processing and consolidating new memories.
Now, you mentioned this unusual finding in an MRI, which was complete. Is it ischemia or ischemia?
Well, I say it ischemia, and I think that's right. And it's basically lack of perfusion, lack of oxygen. We don't think it's really, you know, a stroke is where a blood vessel gets obstructed or a clot goes to a blood vessel in the brain. We don't think it represents that, but some kind of direct sort of toxic effect on the hippocampus. So on these MRIs, they had almost pure evidence of abnormalities in the hippocampi. Some of the patients ultimately had other findings, but that would not be unusual in a variety of circumstances. So what was unusual was this very specific effect on the hippocampi.
And is it permanent, or does the blood flow and the oxygen flow to the hippocampus regions, does that come back? Does the memory ability come back?
Well, we have limited information on long-term follow-up of these patients because this was a public health investigation, not a clinical observation over time. So the limited evidence that we have suggests that these patients, many of them did get better, perhaps not entirely well, so that they still had some residual memory loss. And to a varying extent, Dr. Barish was able to follow his patients over time and noted improvement, I think, in all of them, but very variable improvement.
Now, you mentioned that the Department of Public Health decided to follow up Dr. Barish's observation of these first four cases. How many more did you find when you went looking?
So the first thing we did was we asked the Board of Registration and Medicine to keep some mailing list, an email list of providers, physicians by specialty. And we asked them to send out an alert that we developed with the specifics of what we were looking for to neurologists, neuroradiologists, and emergency department physicians, figuring that they were the ones who were most likely to see these patients. Because we recognized that many of these patients could go undiagnosed because they came to an emergency department with an overdose or acute toxicity. And because the first four patients had this substance use disorder history, we were sort of looking at that as well. And that they could easily, you know, sort of wake up, get better, and people would not necessarily know that they had a very specific memory loss because they might be confused. It wouldn't be unusual for people to have sort of residual effects of toxicity or overdose, and they wouldn't be recognized. So we thought that if they were recognized and they were referred, they would be referred to neurologists. And if they had MRI or other imaging studies consistent with the effect on the hippocampi, that the neuroradiologists would remember those. So we sent this out in March, and we actually got quite a good response in the few weeks thereafter with neurologists and others contacting us and said, hey, wait a minute. Yeah, you know, I saw this. I thought it was unusual. Do you want to hear about this case? And ultimately, we got about 25 potential cases that met our case definition. But after further analysis, many of those cases had other explanations. Now, that doesn't mean that they didn't have what we were looking at, but we couldn't be sure that it wasn't due to other causes that have been described in the past to cause similar problems. So we ultimately wound up with 10 more cases in addition to the four that Dr. Barish had diagnosed. And we were able to get medical records and MRIs on those individuals and put together the report that came out in the CDC's MMWR publication. And we wanted to use that publication because that's the fastest way to get something like this out to a broad audience. And we have gotten some response to that publication, but not really the kind of response we got to the initial. So, you know, it sort of suggests that maybe these cases were sort of around and people recognized what we were talking about. Although there was one case last summer after the notification that we recognized as one of these cases as well.
I mean, still 14 cases, given the number of people in the state of Massachusetts that unfortunately at this point are overdosing and using opiates, how can you explain this being so rare? Do we have any sense of what might have been going on? Is it a contaminant? Is it some other medicine they were taking or an underlying condition? What might explain these 14 cases?
Yeah, it could be anything like that. We don't really know. All we know is that these 14 cases have some history of substance use, either acutely or in the past, and may have been exposed to other substances. Those substances may be opiates, opioids, they may be other substances, they may be contamination. Those are all the kinds of things that we would hypothesize as potentially relevant here. And because we found 14 cases relatively easily for something that might have been missed, we were concerned that we really need to get the word out there that people could start looking for these cases and identify them early when there was some opportunity to get specimens of whatever substances they were using or get a better history of what substances they were using, because there had been precedents for contamination in the past. Recently, New York reported on cases of people exposed to a synthetic marijuana type substance that caused what they called the zombie effect. And then a number of years ago, there was a contaminated substance, an illicit substance that people were using that caused a Parkinson's-like syndrome. So we know that fentanyl, both pharmaceutical fentanyl, but more importantly, synthetic fentanyl that people are manufacturing is increasingly getting into the opiate supply. And that may be relevant here, too, either some of these compounds or some contamination. And that whatever it is, I mean, you already pointed out the seriousness of the problem that we're now having with the opioid epidemic, that some people might be susceptible to the toxic effect of one of these synthetic contaminants or adulterants. And so we really would want to know that. This is serious and bad enough already with overdoses and a variety of other complications. This is just one more complication. But on the other hand, it turns out that complication of contamination back in the 80s in California actually wound up teaching us a lot about what causes Parkinson's disease and how to treat it. So,
yeah, do you think this could actually help researchers understand a question that really has been incredibly difficult, and scientists have been working on it for decades, trying to figure out how the hippocampus works and how memory works?
Yeah, no, I think that's possible. Obviously, it's more important to find out what's going on and prevent it from happening so people aren't damaged by this. But in the course of doing that, it may very well teach us something about the hippocampus that we don't know about.
Do you think as the prevalence of Narcan, both law enforcement officials using it and being able to get, you know, your own to use at home, do you think that could mean that there are more cases of this memory loss syndrome happening that just aren't being diagnosed? They aren't going to an emergency room. They aren't going to a neurologist. And so we don't know if this is actually more common.
Well, we don't know. We don't know if this is directly related to overdose or to exposure. So not all of these individuals had a defined overdose that triggered this. But nonetheless, you know, Narcan has been an enormous beneficial intervention for overdose. And the lives saved have been substantial. And again, you know, if those lives were complicated by something like this memory loss, we would want to know that as well.
Now, most of the patients who actually ended up fitting your criteria of these 14 cases were men. Do you think that's biologically significant?
Yeah, it might be. It might be, case ascertainment. It might be who's more likely to use synthetic substances that might be involved here, because, again, we don't know exactly what was involved. So it might be patterns of substance use as well. But it is an interesting observation. And we have to collect more information prospectively. Now, obviously, everybody who shows up with an overdose or has a substance use problem wouldn't be a candidate to have an MRI. That's not what we're suggesting. What we're suggesting is maybe screening people. You know, it's not unusual for people to be a bit confused when they're leaving the emergency department. But, you know, I think, you know, people ordinarily, even with an overdose, should know where they had been, where they were yesterday, those kinds of things that some of these patients would not have been able to answer correctly. So there are some questions that people could craft that would eliminate confusion and define somebody with this syndrome. But again, you know, unless we do this prospectively, we can't have all the information that's necessary, both to determine cause and to determine the pathway that might have caused this.
Well, you've just said this, you know, a prospective study. I mean, you've got 14 cases that, you know, you've just kind of preliminarily described, hey, we've seen this. What kind of future studies would you like to see? And do you have concrete plans to pursue that?
Well, no, we don't, because we're a public health agency. We don't really do that. We don't have a clinical facility, to do it in. So we are really going to depend on the clinical community to identify these cases and collect the type of information that you can't collect retrospectively in terms of exposures, and to get the appropriate studies for the patients who seem to have this syndrome at a time when they will show the effects, because those if that changes over time. So that's what we hope that this will do. It'll make clinicians aware, so in emergency departments they'll identify these patients at the time that they're suffering their acute process, get the appropriate studies, and try to relate what's going on in these patients to what they were exposed to at a time when, you know, obviously somebody with a memory loss is not going to be a good historian in terms of what they were exposed to, but the opportunity to question their friends and people who might know exactly what they were using and collect those drugs for further analysis would be very valuable in terms of figuring out what's going on.
Dr. Alfred DiMaria is medical director and state epidemiologist with the Bureau of Infectious Disease and Laboratory Sciences for the state of Massachusetts. He co-authored a recent study in the CDC's Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Report detailing these 14 cases of memory loss associated with opioid use. Dr. DiMaria, thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
I'm Heather Goldstone. Living Lab continues after a short break.